Atlantic Canada can be windy. For those of us who live here, we say things like, it's blowing a gale, or someday on close, what? Finally, this part of the world is capitalizing on its wind to create renewable energy. SWEB Development, a leader in wind farm renewable energy generation, has its regional headquarters in Nova Scotia. Please welcome Rory Cantwell, the CEO of their Halifax operations. He's proud of their 100 megawatt wind and solar projects across Atlantic Canada and Northeast US. Coming up next, here's my chat with Rory. Hi, Rory. Welcome to the podcast.
Yes. Hi, Maria. Happy to be here.
I know. I'm really happy you're here because, you know, I kind of have a personal interest in wind energy. This is what you do, and this is what SWEB does as well. And really happy to have you guys here because I know that you guys are very active in the industry here in Atlantic Canada. And I'm really hoping today's podcast can give everyone a really good a snapshot of your company and the projects that you're working on. So tell me a little bit about SWEB.
Sure. So I'm Rory Cantwell. I'm the CEO of SWEB Development. We are a renewable energy independent power producer, also known as an IPP, and we're based here in beautiful Halifax, Nova Scotia. We've been here for about 10 years. And in that time, we've built our business around identifying, developing, constructing, financing, and operating projects. We currently operate about 100 megawatts of wind and solar projects in Eastern Canada and the Northeastern US. Recently, we were awarded the 94.4 megawatt Weavers Mountain wind energy project in partnership with Glooskap First Nation. And that was through Nova Scotia's rate base procurement. And that should come online in the next couple of years. Further, our corporate parent is WEB. They're an Austrian community-owned energy transition company. And WEB has been around for about 30 years and operates over 600 megawatts of wind, solar, small-scale hydroelectric power plants throughout Europe and North America. In terms of who we are at SWEB, our mission is twofold. One, we find creative solutions to fight the climate change crisis. And two, we prioritize sharing meaningful benefits with the communities in which our projects are sited. And in many cases, these can be First Nation communities. So thanks for inviting me to the podcast. Excited to be here. I think your podcast is great and it's excellent to see some focus here in Atlantic Canada.
It is. And I also, you know, want to find out a little bit more because from about your organization, because community collaboration is very important. And why is that? Why?
Right. Yes. Yes, you're right, Maria. As I mentioned in our intro, the company's mission is to find creative solutions to the climate change crisis and to make sure the related project benefits are shared with the communities. What I didn't mention is that we think of our company as showing a way as to how things can be done and certainly collaborate with and encourage entities to join us in the journey of making our projects a success. In other words, we try to bring our stakeholders along with us, particularly such groups that have been historically underrepresented in the energy sector. Back to your question about collaboration, I think what is essential for the success of any project is to communicate early and often with the key stakeholders. That certainly is the community. I know it's kind of cliche to say that, but it's very true. And the reason for that is because with early engagement, you can integrate the community's feedback into the project design. It's much harder to integrate feedback later on in the development process as things start to get sort of set in stone. And when I say community, it can be a broad definition, right? It can be the municipal government. It can be a recreation group, a group of concerned citizens, a conservation group, or a First Nation community.
So if someone was a member, like let's say someone was a member of the community liaison committee for something like Yellow Birch or Sugar Maple Project. What kind of questions or what kind of commitment is needed for someone to be on that committee?
Yeah, that's a really good point. So maybe a bit of background, community liaison committees, or CLCs. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's kind of a way we walk the talk. So what they are, ideally, it's a group of people based in the area of a given project, which are independently managed and not affiliated with the project company at all. They have this forum to facilitate discussion and share information between the project company and the community. So the CLC will provide feedback and ideas for ways to improve a project or troubleshoot potential impacts. And also a CLC, well, there'll be a fund associated with project revenue, and the CLC will be involved in directing how those funds are invested in the community. So that's one way that they can share in some of the project benefits. And typically these investments are related to the themes of say a renewable energy project. So, you know, sustainability initiatives, conservation initiatives, decarbonization, education, and so forth. So with that in mind, you mentioned Yellow Birch, but we have a number of projects here in Nova Scotia where we're actively seeking members for our CLCs. There's more information on our website, so sweb.energy.ca, so sweb.energy. And you'll find a lot of info there. Also, our email address is contact@sweb.energy. Maybe you can post
yeah,
it.
Yeah, we'll share that for sure. If you're actively looking, yeah. What are your thoughts on the opportunity for energy generation, you know, from wind in Atlantic Canada? I know you mentioned Atlantic Canada, but I guess there's northeastern the U.S. as well.
Hmm. Good question. The opportunity is huge. Yeah. We're sort of in a perfect storm here, certainly in Atlantic Canada, and pardon the pun, but there are very strong winds and good wind regimes in this area, but also carbon intense grids that require decarbonization through regulatory requirements, but also because generators are starting to age and the energy transition has created a clear and present need for new carbon-free power, such as wind. And wind is of particular interest due to its price point, whereby it's one of the lowest cost options of new forms of electricity. And the other benefit is with wind, the power purchase agreements, they're typically fixed rates for the sale of the power or some sort of known indexation. So the buyers know exactly how much they'll be paying for that power for, you know, a 25-year period, for example. Thus, there's no risk for fuel price volatility that you might see in other forms of power generation. And I mean, you don't have to take my word for it. Both Nova Scotia and New Brunswick have shared plans for significant investment in renewable energy over the next 10 years. Nova Scotia's clean power plan speaks to over 1,000 megawatts of new wind by 2030. And New Brunswick's recently released Path Forward to 2035 speaks to a similar amount of wind energy being added to the grid.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Now, when, you know, we all see wind farms, you know, for one thing, we're driving along the highway, we're going from point A to point B, and, you know, we see them, you know, popping up in a lot of places. You know, for a lot of people like me, in an earlier conversation we had, I had no clue that no one wind farm is the same. Sometimes you see, something, the turbines, might be rotating around and some may not, and what is the reason of that? So tell me a little bit about, or everyone listening in, what factors go into the development, of a wind farm project?
Right. Well, I'll give a bit of background on wind energy itself. So, I mean, wind energy, it's a relatively simple concept, right? It's one that humans have been harnessing for thousands of years. I mean, from milling grain to sailing across oceans to the modern electricity production we're talking about right now. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, how it works, there are differences in atmospheric pressure based on a number of different factors, such as climate, topography, season. And these pressure differences result in wind flow. So this kinetic energy is then converted into mechanical energy through the rotation of the blades, which is then converted into electrical energy and delivered to the grid. Hmm. So I have a turbine here.
Yeah.
So as the wind passes over the blades, lift is created. So much like the sail on the boat or an airplane wing, as the wind passes, it creates lift. So it's like the Bernoulli principle you would have learned about in high
right.
school. The wind, as it passes over these blades, where the surface area is greater on one side and lesser on another side, an area of low pressure is formed on the side with greater surface area, high pressure on the side with less surface area, and the blade starts to rotate. As it rotates, there's a shaft here and then a cell, which turns, and there's an electrical generator. Electrical generator then produces electricity, which travels down through the tower of the turbine and to your electric grid. So essentially that aerodynamic force, the kinetic energy is transferred into mechanical energy, which is then turned into electrical energy, which is what we consume.
I love how you showed, you described that, and that explains it really well to someone like me. The other question I have is, are all the blades the same on turbines? And like, does each area have a different type of turbine for that area?
That's a good point. So I gave a bit of background on wind energy and how that works, but what else we sort of look at, and one of the more important things is windy areas, essentially. So once we've found a site, we think it looks good, we want to start studying that wind regime. I mean, we're also looking for other areas that are sparsely populated, that is near existing infrastructure, such as power lines and roads. And then we start the development effort. So we'd be, talking to the community. We'd be performing environmental analysis. We would install these meteorological towers to study the wind, or this remote sensing equipment like LIDARs or SODARs. As we gather that information over several years, we can tell what the wind regime looks like. And so, you see turbines around the province, for example, and a lot of these turbines can be different from each other, right? And the reason for them being different, there's a number of factors there, but the turbines aren't all the same, I guess, is the main takeaway. So what is important to understand is the wind regime. So we do a robust analysis. We can determine the optimal turbine for given location based on the wind speed, mm-hmm. Things like shear factors and available technology. So all this information sort of leads to an optimal marginal cost of generation for a given technology. And with that data, we're able to sort of pick the best turbine for a given site.
That location. Yeah. And the needs. That's interesting. What would you say are some of the biggest myths or the misconceptions that people have about wind farms, that you hear or have heard?
Myths. Well, it's myths. So, I mean, I've been working in wind for a long time, since the aughts. And when I first started working in wind, it was still a bit of a fringe technology. So you couldn't really point to wind turbines in the near area for people to go check out. So there's a lot of, fear of the unknown, let's say. So, I mean, criticisms about it costing too much, for example. And nowadays, wind's been out in the the environment for you know, a long period of time. You know, we're solidly 10 years into having wind here in Nova Scotia. And a lot of those myths have been put to bed. Wind has been proven to be a low cost, carbon free, employment dense, reliable form of electricity.
That's awesome. And I want to believe, you know, I believe that too, because I'm seeing them pop up, you know, and I'm seeing them in areas, and it's nice to see that the investment is being made. And that leads me to our last question is what's next for SWEB? And I know you have big plans. I know you have a lot of great projects on the go. Do you want to tell us a little bit about those and how they're coming along?
Sure. So, I mean, what can I say? It's certainly an exciting time to be a renewable energy developer in Atlantic Canada. There's just so much going on. And we'll certainly do our best to participate in the programs that are brought forward in the region, such that we fight climate change and keep prices as low as we can for the rate base. Mm-hmm. As I mentioned, we're committed to finding creative solutions for the climate change crisis and ensuring the benefits are associated with these solutions are shared in a meaningful way with the communities in which they're sited. And what is particularly important to us is ensuring we help Nova Scotia and New Brunswick decarbonize, given the grid here is very carbon dense compared to other Canadian jurisdictions. So big plans for Eastern Canada. I mean, I look forward to growing beyond that, but right now there is just so much opportunity here. And by the way, I'd really like to point out that we're proud of the bold action being taken by the province and the utilities to meet the changes of the energy transition. And I mean, it's great to see the developers that began in the ComFit program many years ago grow from these smaller projects to larger projects that we see today. The ComFit program was a bold program in its day, and it gave way to the local industry we have here in the Maritimes. For example, the winners of the rate-based procurement that I mentioned earlier, those were all awarded to companies that had ties with the ComFit program. So really great to see the industry sort of growing locally. And, you know, we're certainly happy to call Halifax home, and great to see all these opportunities before us.
Wonderful. And I will make sure that we share the CLCs, the communities, and how people can get involved and become a stakeholder, perhaps, and all the steps they need to take. Tell me about Indigenous collaboration. Very important for your organization. Do you want to talk about how you involved that community?
Yes. Well, first off, I mean, working with First Nation communities is key for our company. Not only is it in line with our mission, but we find there is strong interest from First Nations to participate in renewable energy projects, given the treading lightly on the earth ethos and it being a good way to diversify their investments. Furthermore, in many cases, the First Nation is part of the community in which the projects are sited. Thus, they hold a deep understanding of the land, which is extremely important during the stakeholder engagement, planning, and design phases of a project. And lastly, as a business leader, I think it's important to prioritize inclusion of First Nation communities in these projects and to invite them to participate, as they were not included in previous industrial revolutions. Thus, the onus is on the developers to ensure they are part of the energy transition. I might add that I have learned a lot from working with First Nation communities, and I found that after speaking with our partner First Nations about certain challenges and opportunities, I always find myself thinking about these things in new ways, often leading to creative solutions that otherwise I'm not sure they would have been considered. So, Indigenous collaboration sort of key to how we do business here at SWEB.
Very important. No, that's great. Rory, I want to thank you for your time today. It was really great to have you. And I can't wait to hear about your progress, you know, in the next couple of years.
Yes. Thank you very much, Maria. I really, really enjoy the opportunity to speak about all these great projects that are happening out here.
I hope this episode gave you something to think about the next time you're driving past a wind farm on the highway. Thank you, Rory. This podcast is sponsored by the Smart Energy event in Halifax, where registration is taking place right now, and yours truly will be there. Have an idea for a guest on the Reimagined Energy podcast? Well, look no further than reimagineenergy.com. Fill out a form, and we'll gladly get back to you. I'm Maria McGowan, your host. Thanks for watching and listening today. See you next time.